Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back. We are talking about minute 106 through 107. And this minute is starting off with Kynes giving us a little bit of a...
Kynes.
Giving us a little bit of a history lesson. And it ends with... oh my God, it's so gross. I hate it. I hate it so much, John. It's so gross. Coffee.
So we
ended yesterday with Kynes, in the middle of her spiel about, tell us about the testing station, and how that they, their intended purpose was to, bring life back to Arrakis effectively.
Yeah.
Or be a catalyst
to that. To free the water trapped beneath the sands.
Yep, exactly.
Quote Kynes directly.
And she continues, she said the work had begun, but then the spice was discovered. And suddenly no one wanted the desert to go away. Now it has not been explicitly mentioned or spelled out in the books or the movie, at this point, the connection between the worms and the spice.
Yes. What the movie did do that wasn't done in the book was just like in the first few minutes, it's like, hey, yeah, spice is needed for travel. Whereas that's like one of Paul's big revelations in the book. No, there hasn't been any discussion about the relationship between Shai-Hulud and the creation of spice. You and I have talked about it on several episodes here. The long and the short of it is essentially spice is just a byproduct of the worm.
Yep. The life cycle.
For all intents and purposes, it's worm shit.
Yeah, pretty much. mixed up a little bit of water and dried. And so I thought this was an interesting way of for Kynes to allude to this. Like, clearly the people who discovered the spice knew that this was a product of the desert. Whether or not they knew it was a product of the worms, we don't know.
No.
But they knew that the desert was integral, or the desert environment was integral to the natural production of spice. So, yeah, once they discovered it and once they had a need for this spice, the terraforming projects on Arrakis were abandoned. They stopped. Did a little bit of looking into kind of the importance of Arrakis as it relates to the discovery of spice.
Okay.
Prior to the spice becoming important, no one gave a shit about Arrakis.
Yeah, it's some backwater ass, shithole planet.
Yeah, it was nothing
from the Outer Rim.
If there's a bright center
to
the galaxy.
Sorry, I'm getting my space sci-fi mixed up there.
Star Wars is a space western.
It's a space samurai movie.
Yeah, pre-spice, no one cared about Arrakis. Someone, I didn't write down the name of the character, but someone with a very futuristic name discovered like geriatric properties of spice.
Yep.
Just the ability to make it, make you live longer. And so it got a little more notoriety at that point. People were like, okay, this is not totally worthless. But then our favorite turning point in Dune history, the Butlerian Jihad happened. And
we love a good jihad.
The importance of spice became known to the Spacing Guild at that point. And all of a sudden, Arrakis was thrust into the center of...
It became the most important planet.
Yeah, and to the center of all, politics and just machinations there contained, whatever.
You heard about Chome.
Yeah, right. And it was essentially labeled like an essential resource for the galaxy. And this was right about the time where the Carino Empire was coming to power. So it has always been a center point for the Carino Empire, Arrakis. So it went from backwater planet that no one cared about to being the most important place within the Imperium.
Yep. For thousands of years to come.
Yep, exactly. So these testing stations predate that. or a lot of them do anyways. They predate the Butlerian Jihad.
Which so we know that they're over 11,000 years old.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So it's crazy.
Crazy. Yeah.
Back in the station, Kynes starts barking some orders to Fremen workers.
I wouldn't say she's barking orders, no, but she's not. Definitely like more than asking.
Yeah. She's giving out orders for sure.
Yeah.
She asked a person named Tanat to get them still suits.
For our guests.
Yep. Still suits for the guests. And she asked a person named Shamir to do coffee service, which I was like, all right, cool. Cool.
And there was coffee service. There was an immediate, of course, from both of them.
Yeah. Yep.
To which Paul immediately is like, who are you to the Fremen?
Yeah.
And I love Kynes' response, which is a non-response where she just kind of like turns around and gives him like a little bit of a smirk for a second and then just continues walking.
Yep. Yep.
Which, you know, to people that are not familiar with the background, you know, cause a lot of people were introduced to Dune from this adaptation. Like people would be like, oh, is she like royalty or whatever?
I mean, kinda.
Yes and no.
Yeah. A very, very important person.
Yes.
Within the Fremen. Yeah. They don't, I mean, to the length that they have a class system within the Fremen. No, she's like a normal person, but she's a very, very important person.
Yeah.
Within them. Mainly because of her, you know, the at least the character of Liet Kynes' father, Pardo Kynes, was also a very, very important person to the Fremen.
Correct.
This was a little bit of a nit that I want to pick, but just something that is different from the books. And
it's only Tuesday. We're picking nits already.
No. So we get the response. Yes, Liet. Of course, Liet. And that is also from the books. Like that, those lines are from the books. And this is, it holds a lot more weight in the books because up to this point, it's only been really speculated and not really confirmed by too many people, or at least that too many people that are still alive at this point, that Dr. Kynes is this person, Liet, which is a, you know, very important person in the Fremen. They don't know that it's the same person. They've heard like rumors of the spiritual leader Liet, and that being some, you know, some bigwig within the Fremen culture, but they don't know that it's Kynes.
Yeah,
and we, you know, here in the movie, we get, you know, right at the very beginning,
introduced as Dr. Liet Kynes.
Yeah, so they take that whole like subplot out and just give you the name up front, but when they say yes, Liet. To her in the books, Jessica's like, what the fuck is this? Like, is this the same person?
Holy shit.
Yeah. So it's a little moment of revelation for Jessica in the books, which is cool. Not impactful to the story that we're watching on screen. So I understand why they didn't take, or they took it out, but it is a cool moment in the books. I just said, meanwhile, elsewhere.
Meanwhile, elsewhere, but also, yeah. Yeah, no, kind of behind them, Duncan Idaho is just kind of like trailing along, you know, walking through. And then there's a room off to the side that kind of catches his eye and he diverts away from the group for a second. And he enters a side room that kind of looks like a laboratory.
Hell yeah, dude. They're growing some kush in the back room.
Dr. Kynes is growing that good. The sticky icky, baby.
They got the grow lights up. the hydroponic lab.
It is a grow lab.
Yep.
Not for weed.
We don't know.
But for, you know, other kind of greenery. And I kind of made a note that this was the first natural greenery that we've seen in over 40-ish minutes.
Sure.
Since they left Caladan.
Yeah. Well, we see the palms, but I would agree with you. Those are not exactly those natural. Those
more brown.
Fair. Very fair.
Yeah. This is lush greenery.
Yeah.
For sure.
And at one point, the palms were on fire.
Yeah.
So they were red at that point, red-orange.
Well, so fun fact from The Art and Soul of Dune, Volume 1, not sponsored. So for that shot, those were palms made out of metal. because they wanted to like have a consistent look of them being on fire for long enough, like not only during the shot of like the palms themselves, but then like the whole like beheading scene and everything out in front of the palms. And
I guess real palms would have burned too fast.
Yeah. As you know, because I'm sure you've burned like old dead palm leaves before.
Not palms, but like Christmas trees a month after Christmas. Yeah, it fucking burns
immediately.
Yeah. They go up very quickly. Yeah,
those super dry grasses just gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, Duncan enters this little side lab and we see like a bunch of what look like succulents and stuff. Yeah, and like little small plants in all sorts of different like growing contraptions. Like you see that there's some like miniature glass greenhouse looking things. Like
was it terrarium?
Yeah, there's different terrariums and stuff. There's one that I thought that was really cool where it was like you had these two like glass bulbs on top of each other. So it definitely looks like Kynes is like looking for the optimal way to try and grow things in this environment.
Did you ever make a terrarium in your life?
No. Okay. I was never a terrarium kid.
I made a few.
I wanted to be an ant farm kid for like a really long time.
Yeah, I had an ant farm. Those were fun.
My parents were never keen on the ant farm idea.
But they
bought me an Alien Ant Farm CD.
That's true. I stole my brother's. Yeah.
It's a really good record.
It's great. Great album.
Anthology.
Yep. Still listen to it to this day. Still hits.
Yep.
I had a couple like self-sustaining terrariums growing up.
I've seen a lot of videos lately on like TikTok and stuff of people just like grabbing a fistful of dirt and watching what happens.
It's really cool. Yeah. I mean, it's honestly pretty neat. I would highly encourage people to go do it. I mean, it's a nice little thing to grow, especially if you get it working, because they can become their own environment. They're
fully self-sustaining ecosystems.
I've seen big ones, like, you know, massive jars where people like not just like small little things, but if the jar is big enough and it has enough air inside, it can actually develop like clouds inside.
They're like,
and
those, like
mist and
they're
stuff.
They're like those, like what you would expect to see from like a wizard's like closet, giant like glass globes almost.
Yeah.
Full of, there's like a layer of dirt in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're cool. So I would highly recommend looking into those if you have an interest in that stuff, because they're really cool to do. Pretty low maintenance too, honestly. Once you get it going, you just set it in some sunlight and let it go.
Yeah. Now I might want to do that.
Do it. Well, the tree that I think captures Duncan's attention the most, or at least the one that we see have the most screen time,
has a big wide leaf with a lot of, you know, different leaves.
Yep.
Or different blades off of the leaf, I suppose.
Yeah.
It has a funky smell to it. It's really sticky when he touches it.
Okay. I see what you're doing. Okay. I was being for real here for a second. I was going to say it looked like a bonsai. I mean, it looked like a bonsai tree.
Yeah. No, it was definitely like,
let's say a bonsai tree.
In my notes, what I said was, it looks like if you had tried to make a bonsai out of like clover.
Yeah.
With like those small clover leaves, but like the branches on it were like very thick, like grown for a while, kind of.
Yeah. Talk about a lifelong hobby. Bonsai is something that is crazy.
Yeah.
Me and my, one of my brothers, we both really like Japanese maples, like the trees. And we bought a couple years ago, and mine are still very small because I'm trying to intentionally keep them small like that. His have grown, you know, we bought them at the same time. They're around the same height when we bought them. His are now like 5 or 6 feet tall. I mean, they're shooting up, but I'm trying to keep mine small like this. And it's got a cool root structure that probably in a couple of years, I'm going to take it out and see if I can get it to wrap around a rock.
How have you and I been friends for 12 years and you've never shown me this?
Oh, I mean, it lives at my parents' house, so it's not at my place.
I was going to say, I've been to your house so many times and I've never seen this.
My place, as you know, gets about 3 hours of natural sunlight a day.
Yeah.
It is most of the time a dark dungeon. But my parents have this nice big backyard with plenty of greenery out there. So it lives over there. So next time you're over at their place, I'll show you.
All right, cool. Shout out to your parents.
Yeah. This looks like a cool bonsai project that they've got going on in there. And that is kind of right where No, sorry, we don't end right there. We got a whole other disgusting section of this minute.
I feel like you're just stalling for time.
I'm trying to block it out. I hate this.
Let's talk about coffee, Zach.
Let's talk about coffee. So right after we get right after Duncan looks at the tree for a little bit,
looking at the sticky icky.
Yeah, we cut from there to this like really really big empty room, which I think is the part where
it is the Nexus.
Yeah, yeah, that's the part where it looks like the cooling tower. We see like a group of people huddled over in the corner, and they're when we get closer to them, they're kind of huddled over this like jet boil looking camp stove thing.
What I called it was the Coleman camp stove 40,000 years in the future.
Yeah. Well, do you know what a jet boil looks like?
No.
Look that up real quick.
Jet boil?
Yeah. One word.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, all right, yeah. It's quite literally that.
Yep. Pretty much. Yeah.
This is like a very, very, very lightweight camping stove. Like I would say not necessarily camping, but like backpacking equipment.
Sure.
And yeah, I have one and I use it often when I go out, and it's, as soon as I saw this, we learn is a coffee pot. As soon as I saw that, I was like, man, they got jet boils in the future. That's cool. I'm glad the company stuck around.
Now, if any company is going to survive 40,000 years, it's going to be Coleman.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
They're just going to be making fucking coolers for 40,000 years.
So,
old Coleman,
we pan up and into this.
What are they making the coffee with, Zach?
Well, you know, let's talk about coffee for a second. Let's talk about coffee beans.
Okay. For the record, I am not a coffee drinker at all.
I'm not really either. I have maybe one cup a week. Like that's maybe how much coffee I drink.
Yeah.
I get my anxiety the natural way. It's just part of me.
I'm self-sustaining.
Yeah.
I am a terrarium.
I am a terrarium of anxiety. So obviously you have to have some kind of water or liquid to steep with the coffee grounds.
Yep. And water's precious on Arrakis.
There's not a lot of it there. So coffee is something that is very precious and very rare.
Yep.
And the water that they use to brew this coffee is spit.
Yep.
And that's fucking disgusting.
And everyone contributes. Everyone just spits in this fucking cup.
Gross. Ew. I hate it. It is...
You can boil it as long as you want. I'm still not gonna. Nope. Fuck no.
No. Oh god. I don't like it. I don't like it. But yeah, they're all sharing.
As a bit of a germaphobe, this scene makes me gag every time we watch it. This is the one time that I like watched it once, and I was like, I saw everything I needed to see for my notes here. I'm not going back and rewatching this over and over and over. No. Thank you.
No, it is. It's just, it's not fun. So I'm not going to dwell on it too long, but they're spitting into the coffee grounds to get the water to brew it. I'm holding on to the hope that their filtration is good enough to where it's not gross like this.
It's just the communal dip cup.
I know. God.
They brew their coffee in an old Gatorade bottle.
Oh, Jesus, I have stories about that are gross, and I don't want to talk about them. So right as the
my gross story about that,
like drinking a dip cup.
Yeah,
spit, that's what I was talking about too. My father used to do that, and at one time used a Dr. Pepper bottle as his spit cup.
I was.
And it looks just like fucking Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, I was drunk as shit at a party one time and accidentally grabbed the wrong cup.
Oh, no, I was a child when this happened to me. Oh. Yeah, I was like 10 or something. Anyways, okay, moving on. So on top of the spit that everyone had just contributed to this coffee, we see a worker like take a little pouch out and like sprinkle something over it.
What I would assume is ground coffee grains or whatever.
I thought it was spice. So in the books, they are talking about, they call it specifically spiced coffee. So
okay.
as with everything on Arrakis, any kind of food is often, or food is served often with spice as a seasoning aspect to it. So just very, very little bits of the spice.
It's too much for Paul's white boy taste buds.
Exactly. So yeah, I thought it was spice that they were sprinkling on the coffee.
I feel like Paul has the actual taste buds of like white people spicy, where like pepper is too much for him.
I know some folks like that, and it's often infuriating to cook for them.
I went on a date with someone one time, and she told me that she didn't like garlic because garlic was too spicy for her. And needless to say, I mean, there were other problems, but needless to say, there was not a second date.
I was about to ask, how quick did you leave?
Do you know how hard it was to find a place to like go eat? Because like normally when I like, if I'm want to take someone somewhere nice, it's going to be, you know, somewhere that has flavor in all of their food and not bland.
Well, that is a daggum shame.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I have another friend of mine who was talking about making a 40 clove garlic chicken.
Yeah. 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 I've heard of this.
Oh, dude.
Love it. Love doing that.
Mark, I know you're listening. Send us an email with that chicken recipe.
We need it, Mark, or else I will say minutes again.
Funny enough, he is the one.
I remember.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Anyways, all right. So right after we get the gross spit coffee and sprinkle on top, we cut outside to a shot of the rock outcropping where the testing station is located, and we get some ships flying in the background and
just kind of levitating menacingly.
And spoilers, they are Harkonnen ships.
Wow, dude, you're already cutting into tomorrow's episode.
Well, yeah, a little
bit. You ruined it.
that's where the minute ends. It's right there, looking at those ships flying over the outcropping. In terms of book notes, I don't really have much to say here. I'm going to save everything that I could say here tomorrow.
Yep.
Because it just makes more sense that way.
We'll do that then.
All right, cool.
In the meantime, if you are not Mark, but you want to yell at us about coffee, or if you want to share other, you know, garlic heavy recipes, Zach and I are both big on, you know, cooking and shit. So, you know, send us your recipes. You can do so on Instagram at the Dune Minute. You can do so on Twitter at Dune Minute, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com. We'll be back tomorrow for a Wednesday episode, and unfortunately, we're still going to be talking about spit coffee tomorrow, too. Yeah. So,
fun. All right, cool. Yep. See you then.
See ya.